You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary tastes with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Idealist of the day, this guy, Yunus Haresh, who's got, by the way, he's making some really good lists on Notepad. He's been doing his idealist every day on N-O-T-E-P-D, no A, notepad.com. And his latest one is 7 Japanese concepts that can help with self-mastery. And some of these I knew about and have really fallen in love with in my own life. And some of these I'm hearing for the first time, joined by Jay and Paulo. Paul, you ever heard of Ikigai before?
You know, I've heard of it before, but I don't know what it is.
So I'll just list them like right now, or some of them. Ikigai, Kaizen. I think a lot of people have heard of Kaizen. Wabi Sabi. Some people have heard of. There's a book about it. Some people haven't heard of. But Ikigai is one of my, all of these are my favorite. Let's talk about Kaizen first. Kaizen means, this is what Yunus is saying. Kaizen means continuous and incremental improvement for the better. Continuous and incremental improvement is vital to get good habits and achieve excellence. And it reminds me of this concept that if you improve 1% per day at anything, you improve 3,800% per year because of the power of compounding. You don't just improve 365%. You're 38 times better than you were at the beginning of the year. If you just improve 1% a day, that's Kaizen.
Didn't you came up with the concept 1% better?
No, I stole it. I don't come up with any concepts myself.
You stole it.
I actually...
You stole it from the Japanese.
Yeah, maybe I stole it from the Japanese. But a lot of people talk about this. Like James Clear talks about this in his book, Atomic Habits. And I know I stole a graphic from him once because I think he was a little upset about it. But it's a very simple concept. And again, you can't say like, I'm going to improve every day at... I don't know, my knowledge of science, because you can't quantitatively measure that. But look, if you put in work every day at something, like if you study language every day, you'll be 38 times better at Spanish than you were at the beginning of the year. If you try to improve 1% a day at your Spanish speaking, like Paulo, you've studied languages. Do you think that's true? Like, do you think if you improve your ability to speak a language 1% a day, at the end of a year, you might be fluent or close to fluent?
I feel like with everything, the more advanced you become, the harder it is to improve, right?
Yeah, so the learning curve is steep, but then it plateaus.
I was actually thinking about it right now, right? Is actually 1% even achievable? Because it sounds so little, of course I'll be able to improve 1%. But, when you become pretty good at something, improving 1% is actually hard. I wonder if the distribution is more like, 1% for the first 100 days, and then it's going to become 0.5% and then 0.1%.
Right,
because that's how that's normal, right? That's how improvement comes about. So I wonder if improving 3,000% or whatever in the course of a year, it's actually an overestimation. I wonder if there's actually any field where people have actually done it.
Yeah, because it's an interesting thing, because let's say we're talking about a sport, which is somewhat measurable, like how you do at a sport. At first, it's very easy to improve because you're competing against, if you're comparing yourself relative to other people, in the beginning, you're just competing against people who are not that good at the field. But as you get better and better, you're competing against people who put in serious time and effort. And it's a little bit harder to compare, to improve relative to them, because they're also trying to improve. And, it's very, very difficult. But, first off, Kaizen doesn't say 1% a day. It just means you feel better about life as you achieve excellence and as you have good habits. And part of doing that is not skipping a day. So it's continuous and incremental improvement. So for instance, writing down 10 ideas a day, it doesn't matter. Maybe don't write 10 ideas a day, but if you could even do 2 ideas a day or 3 ideas a day, if you're trying to exercise every day, maybe you don't do 100 pushups a day, but if you get in 5 pushups just to keep the continuous improvement going, I think that's what Kaizen refers to. And it feels good. You feel like you're building habits.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, because at times even kind of having goals that are too big is a big problem. Like, for example, I've seen with many things, I think that the most important thing every day is to just do 1 step in the right direction, right? As long as you do one right. in the right direction, it's better than standing still or going backwards.
Yeah, and it reminds me of one time, this was 1991. Okay, I was just thrown out of graduate school. I was unemployed. I had nothing to do, nowhere to go. And I was a little depressed. And a friend of mine called me up and said, listen, just do 1 positive thing a day to move yourself forward and you'll feel better. You'll be more likely to get your next job and so on. And that person was right. I don't know if that was actually Kaizen, but that continuous thing. By the way, the notion of the learning curve and like how it gets steep in the beginning, but then it sort of plateaus, and it is the same as the math for the curve for a pandemic. So in a pandemic, like when COVID started, everybody thought, oh my gosh, this is going to grow exponentially every single day until it covers the entire world and everybody dies from COVID or whatever. But the math for a pandemic, which none of the newspapers either talked about or seemed to know, was more like a learning curve, which is like an S. So at first you don't know anything, then it's flat, then it goes straight up like that. The learning curve is steep, and then it plateaus, like you were saying, Paulo. But it's the same thing with a pandemic, because at first nobody has it, then people start getting it exponentially, and they spread it to the other people who don't have it. But then herd immunity develops, or some kind of natural immunity or vaccines or whatever, and it plateaus again. So that's the actual math of the math of a pandemic curve is the same as the math for a learning curve. It's probably the same for the math if you model this Kaizen.
So is there a Japanese word for that as well, for the curve?
No.
Maybe
they teach, there should be like a math for all of these philosophical concepts. But if you think about it, like take push-ups as an example. If you start off doing 1 push-up, it's easy to improve 1% a day. But like Jay, how many push-ups do you do every day? Just lie and 30. Say something. 30? Okay.
50.
Like Paul, do you exercise every day?
Yep.
What do you do?
Just weights.
Oh, okay. Do you do push-ups or anything?
Yeah.
Do you try to improve every day?
Not every day for push-ups. I wouldn't do push-ups every day. It would be part of a kind of routine that changes every day. Well, it has a schedule that goes in a weekly fashion.
Are you fully jacked? Are you like in the summer when you go to the beach, do people turn their heads and like, holy shit, is that the Rubik's Cube guy?
Yeah, everyone. Yeah, that's exactly the case.
I can do the Rubik's Cube on his body.
Right, yes,
that's a goal.
Pecs. So yeah. I try to do the 1% a day improvement. I'm like, I start off every morning with 25 push-ups. Sometimes I'll get up to 30 and then I'll like rewind like, oh, I don't feel like doing 30 today, and I'll go back to 25. So it seems hard to improve 1% a day at exercise, but I like the habit though.
For me, I feel like exercise for me, it's, I don't know if I want to improve 1% a day. I feel like I want to slowly build up my muscles. So I just do the same rep over and over until I'm not like out of breath every time I do it.
For muscle building, there are 3 things that matter. One is the amount of calories that you eat. Second is the amount of protein. And then the third is something called progressive overload, which means that whenever you work out, you should stress your muscles a little bit more, right? So if you keep doing every day the same weight and the same number of reps, it's not very useful. It's not going to cause your muscles to grow. You're going to have to actually, that's exactly where the 1% rule would work, because you always need to try to do a little bit more. If you keep it steady, it's not going to cause like optimal muscle growth.
So, I have two questions about that. One is, if you do the same every day, do you at least maintain or no?
Yeah, I think you'd maintain.
And the second question is, what other domains does that apply to as well? Like, for instance, if you're learning a language and you do the same amount of learning every day, are you ultimately not going to get much better at the language?
I'm not sure. I would say yes, though, because it's that's the idea of the kind of deliberate practice, right? You should always do something that takes you a little bit out of your comfort zone. Otherwise, you plateau and coast.
I think that's true. I think that's really true for many activities. Like, for instance, writing. I feel like you always have to experiment and get out of your comfort zone a little bit in order to improve. And that's a scary thing to do because people judge you either constructively or destructively. You can't control people's feedback from when you're out there with podcasting or writing or whatever. Okay, so that's Kaizen. And I do think, you know, doing something continuously and trying to be incremental about improvement is a great idea. Here's another one, Wabi Sabi, which when I first heard that term, I thought it was like wasabi, and it was, I saw it on a book title. I thought it was like a cookbook, but
I mean, kidding, so you know, I'm Asian. I thought it's wasabi as well. I'm like, did that guy spell wrongly? Is it something that put in a sushi? And apparently it's not.
Apparently it's not.
It's embrace imperfections and impermanence in life.
Yeah, so the idea is in part to see the beauty in everything because everything has some imperfection. So like, for instance, a vase might be beautiful, but if there's a crack in the vase, if you're practicing wabi-sabi, you find it even more beautiful that here's this beautiful vase with this, you know, very realistic lifelike imperfection because all life has imperfections to it.
This is almost like the appreciations technique. Like you appreciate everything in life, even though it's not perfect.
Right. So, and it's very similar to having a practice of compassion for people because you know everybody's imperfect, but you can still have compassion for them anyway. And again, it's a beautiful thing when you're looking at, you know, things in life. You start to notice more things. You don't notice just the beautiful things. You notice the things that make it not beautiful, and for that, it makes it even more beautiful for you.
Right.
Yeah, this makes sense. It also reminds me of the sentence, perfect is the enemy of good.
Yeah.
Oh,
so a lot of the times it's better to, you know, get something done and make sure it's done instead of waiting for it to be perfect. And it seems it's got some relation to this as well.
And I guess people like study these things. So like people... You know, I guess maybe artists or whatever, you know, you study wabi-sabi to get better at being an artist. I don't know. Apparently this has been around for hundreds of years, centuries. So the word wabi, I don't understand. When you translate this directly, I looked this up. The word wabi refers to the loneliness of living in nature. And the word sabi meant... lean or withered. So why do you think, nature is viewed as like perfect, but it's interesting. It refers to the loneliness of living in nature and sabi means withered. I wonder how this translates to finding, you know, imperfect objects fascinating and beautiful.
I wonder if it's meant like, even though we are living in a world with nature and loneliness, you know, we have to embrace it and appreciate what you have right now. Because back then, there's no technology. Back then, people live not that close together. I mean, we still like a group or a tribe. But still, like, you know, sometimes go outside all by yourself at night. I can sort of imagine like the Japanese scene, you know, step under the moonlight and there's bamboo trees all around and then wind blowing. It is sort of like, you know, sad and loneliness, but at the same time, it's pretty beautiful because there's moon, there's stars, and you're still alive.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's funny. Like, I feel like America is a very perfectionist kind of society. Not that we're all trying to be perfect, but that we want the things around us to be perfect. So I don't want to just have an iPhone. I need an iPhone where I can read every book that I want. I could listen to every song that I want. I could play every game that I want. I could get the directions to every place that I want. I don't ever want to be out of service. Like, it should never be the case that my service can't be heard, so I can't call people or whatever. Like, every object we have in America, we want to be perfect. And that's what makes America so interesting, I think. This sort of perfectionist frontier aspect that we could always make something a little bit better, a little bit more perfect. But it also makes, I think, there's no way for Americans to back off, and we're always unhappy unless we're moving towards the next state of perfection. Whereas it right. seems like with this philosophy, you could say, oh, I'm feeling lonely in nature, but you could appreciate the beauty around you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this should be the logo of every thrift store.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, embracing perfection. Yeah, you know, why yeah, buy new clothes?
Yeah, there's a hole in this clothes. Buy it, you know, just show off your abs, you know, the hole.
You know, I know for me, when I started more to appreciate my imperfections, of which there were many, my writing became a lot better and got a lot more notice. So when I finally just admitted all of my failings and all the times that I've, you know, had disasters happen to me, that's what people ultimately, like, people would even say on, like, I'd post my articles on Twitter, and this is back in like 2009 or 2010, people would say, right. Oh my God, too much information. But then they would privately write me and say, oh yeah, that happened to me as well. Don't tell anyone. So
what are the one thing that you hated yourself the most, but you changed it or you embraced it and then it became ultimately better for you?
I don't know if anything became ultimately better for me. I think, you know, this is related to Carol Dweck's thing of mindset. You even have, sometimes people have a fixed mindset right. where they think I'm either smart or stupid and I'm born that way. And some people have a growth mindset, meaning, God, I didn't do this so well, but I could try harder and work harder and I'll get better at this. That's like a growth mindset. And everybody likes to right. think that they have a growth mindset, but I actually think I have a fixed mindset. Like, when I was a kid, everyone told me I was like a genius and I was smart and I'd, you know, blah, 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 be a big success. And then when I started failing, I couldn't handle it. I got like depressed. And then when I started writing about the times I've gone broke, that really helped me to analyze, hey, this could happen to me. By the way, it could happen to me many times. And I have to work hard to figure it out so it doesn't happen to me again. Like, I'm sort of addicted to these kinds of failings. So I think, translating this to wabi-sabi, I think looking at things in this way, it allows you to forgive yourself more of your own imperfections when you realize everything has imperfection. Right. It gets rid of that fixed mindset. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You know what I really like on the list, the next item is Shin Gi Tai.
I never even heard of that one.
Shin Gi Tai is actually a thing. Like, it's every culture has it. Every culture has it. But I just like the way it sounds in Japanese. Shin Gi Tai is me translate as mind, technique, and body. So they are the 3 elements for maximum performance in martial art. So what does that really mean is if you have a healthy body and healthy mind, it's way. It's like the best way for you to hone in your skill or refine your skill when you have a healthy body.
Well, it's interesting because in like the chess world, which you think of as purely a mental thing, and it used to be the case that if you like 40, 50 years ago, if you went to a chess tournament, everybody would be, you know, kind of this really, you know, unhealthy looking, you know, people would bring their bag, like 5 bags of McDonald's to the chess tournament, and they'd like be eating at the table, and just everybody smelled badly.
Do they all wear glasses and have acne?
Kind of, yeah. And then look, that's why I was there as an 18-year-old. And but now, I mean, you look at like Magnus Carlsen, who's the world champion. That guy works out every day; like he's in top shape. And all the best chess players, you could tell they're in like top shape. Even at a tournament, you can see the top players are in good shape. And of course, technique gets more and more refined, and so you can't just be smart and play chess. You have to know chess technique. By the way, it's the same as tennis. You can't just be like an athlete. You have to know tennis technique. You have to know the latest skill, coaching techniques, and so on. And of course, you need a healthy mind to be able to handle loss and failure and frustration. And you need to have a healthy body. So and that works for sales too. Let's say you're a business salesperson. People want somebody who is healthy. Look, people want to deal with someone who's healthy looking. And who's smart to be able to adjust to shifting problems and stuff. But also you need to know basic sales techniques in order to be successful as a salesperson. Yeah. So I like that one as well. And it reminds me of, all of this stuff reminds me of like the Japanese tea ceremony. Because I feel like it's...
Wait, what? Japanese tea ceremony?
Yeah, have you ever seen a Japanese tea ceremony?
I've seen it in movies and cartoon and anime, but I don't think I've seen it in real life.
Yeah, there's places in New York. See, you live in New York City, but I always say nobody really makes use of all the things in New York City. There's plenty of places in New York City where you can have an authentic Japanese tea ceremony. And it's not just somebody serving tea. There's a whole philosophy around it where there has to be harmony between the guests and nature. There has to be kind of a... It's almost like it's a very meditative thing to be part of a Japanese. It's like a very spiritual thing to be part of a Japanese tea ceremony. Everything has to be done just right and kind of fit.
Yeah, now I'm very curious. I want to see if I can find a place where they have it in London.
I'm sure there is.
I'm pretty sure.
I've only had tea, which is I suppose it doesn't sound.
No, but the problem you have is your Google is competing with the British afternoon tea.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Which is a completely different thing.
British tea, yeah, it is. You have little string with the pinky.
Yeah,
up.
And you have little sandwiches and little cakes with your afternoon
scones. No. James, what are you talking about? Sandwiches is scone. It's scones.
Are they called scones?
It's scones, but it's not the kind of American scone that you get at KFC. It's more of a sweet thing that you have with jam and I think clotted cream.
So
that's what it goes
British.
With.
So with the Japanese tea ceremony, I'm reading this, you have to have the awareness that each tea gathering is a once-in-a-lifetime event, never to occur again. And so sharing of a bowl of tea should be conducted with humility and utmost sincerity and tranquility.
Well, also like Japanese culture is all about respect, you know, respect other people and self and mindfulness too. So like that only makes sense if
all these things are very mindful and very kind of, there's a very strong connection with nature. And why do you think that doesn't occur in, like, for instance, I feel completely disconnected from nature all the time. And like, and I would think in America, you would be more connected to nature because when Europeans first got to America, I shouldn't say Americans, when Europeans first got to America, it was just all nature. There was nothing else but nature. So why do you think there's not more respect for nature here?
I felt like Americans have a lot of like, hey, we have to get the next best technology mindset. They want to live comfortably, without the nature.
And also by definition, progress is going away from nature, right? Further away, because if we were in nature, we'd be living in a cave, right?
So, that's a good point, actually. Essentially, the more you outsource, the further you are from nature. So for instance, if I outsource cooking, okay, it means I'm ordering delivery through Uber Eats or I'm going to a restaurant. That's completely different than what I would have done if I lived in nature, where I have to cook something. Even like in the oven, okay, is a way of outsourcing digestion. So instead of eating something raw, you put it in an oven and it makes the food easier to digest because it heats it up and it softens it and so on. And we've all gotten used to outsourcing our digestion to microwaves and ovens.
Yeah.
Just I always pause when I think I've made a really stunning, interesting point, but it's okay if nobody else.
Yeah, I mean, it is very interesting.
Yeah, I was speechless myself. Right?
I know. Yeah. Like, who used microwave, dude?
We use
wok. I use wok. Have you looked at my skin color? I use wok all the time.
I never use a wok because I never cook. I order, when my kids are around, they cook. And otherwise, I usually order from Uber Eats. And I have not cooked in about 20 years.
The best invention, I think, is the thing that, like, the East meets West type of thing, is the pan wok. Have you tried pan wok?
What's a pan wok?
So pan wok is a wok, but with a flat surface at the bottom.
Ah, I thought, oh, a wok has like a curved surface, right?
Yeah, yeah. Pan wok is a flat surface, but have the wok shape. It's the best thing ever. You can cook everything. You can cook from Chinese fried rice, pancakes, to pizza if
you
want
to. I feel like your Asian accent just got a little more enhanced while you were saying that. Like you got really into that in a very Asian accent way.
I'm embracing my culture. Yeah. I'm doing wabi-sabi.
So this is seven Japanese concepts. Oh, we didn't say all of them, but that's okay. Seven Japanese concepts that can help with self-mastery. The one we didn't mention really that much was Ikigai that I always like. But read this for the rest. It's on Notepad, notepd.com. And by the way, Paulo, if I branch off this and make my own list of Japanese concepts, does that count as my list of the day to add to my streak?
Yep, definitely.
I don't want to break my streak because then I'll be sad. So, okay. Like, let me see. Oh, I click on branch and all right, I got it. I figured it out. All right. Well, thanks everybody. Thanks Jay and Paulo. And thanks everyone who listened. For me, I know these concepts I think about a lot and have been extremely helpful to me. And they really do not only improve your life, but give you a sense of peace. And for me, I always need things that help me forgive my many, many failures in life.